I'm Marianne Kolbasek-McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. Today I'm speaking with Samantha Jocks, VP of Clinical Engineering at McLaren Healthcare, and Stephen Goodreau, who is Cloud Security and Compliance Evangelist at security firm Gigamon. We're going to be discussing proposed changes to the HIPAA security rule and what these changes could mean for health sector entities. So the Department of Health and Human Services, as we know, in the final days of the Biden administration, published a proposed rule to update the more than 20-year-old HIPAA security rule. The proposed rule was open for 60 days of public comment, but since then, the Trump administration has taken office, and HHS's Office for Civil Rights has not yet indicated how it plans to move forward with this rulemaking. But with that said, what exactly stands out in the proposed HIPAA changes, the good and the bad, and why? Samantha, would you like to begin?
Sure. So for everybody who's not aware, right, these changes are long, right? If you did not get a chance to read all 400 pages of changes that were out there, there are a breadth of recommendations and requirements that are out there. Some of them align to best practices, and I'm sure Stephen, I'll give you a chance to go ahead and kind of talk to some of those best practices. I'm going to kind of start on some of the stuff that from a health organization perspective, we found a little bit onerous, I think, in the requirements. So, for those of you that haven't looked at the document, there are a lot of changes around specifications that organizations such as hospitals and any covered entity is going to have to require to do during changes to their organization. So, first, one of the changes that's recommended is anytime anyone within your organization is terminated, if they have access to a PHI or any type of protected health information, you're going to have to share with all of your health entities, right, that person's termination within 24 hours. So it's really a requirement to try and assure that organizations within your purview, right, that you share business data with, are made aware that anyone that's leaving your organization no longer has access to that data. Obviously, right, small organizations, this is a very onerous type of reporting requirement because we might have hundreds of thousands of business relationships to go ahead and report this data. That's overly burdensome, right, in my opinion. There are some upsides, though, I will say, there are some new compliance requirements, right, some attestations that need to be made to assure that you're complying with updated security regulations, ensuring that you're implementing best practice security standards. And I think maybe I'll hand it over to Stephen to talk about some of those best practice security requirements that are in the document.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at a broad, just shooting from the hip, 60% expansion of HIPAA. And, from my ivory tower, a lot of it's just good data governance. I've worked in the hospitals before. I know that you have to have a bias for resiliency and uptime at all costs. However, we need to start working security into that. And one of the things that really stood out to me was simply having an inventory of all of your devices in your organization on the network, right? And the second one is mapping data flows, PHI data flows. Now, those should, in theory, be fairly static. And once they're done, that should be pretty easy to maintain. One of the things that will be a little onerous now is going to be continuous compliance reporting on the said items. So it also calls out that all traffic should be encrypted. And if it isn't, we need to find ways to remediate either the devices or segment them off. And again, run reporting that that is the case. Now, we know that there are some very particular challenges in this industry, especially around medical IoT. It tends to be mid-maturity on the back end security side of things. But, moving forward and planning, I think it's something we need to start architecting into the system.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think the other thing that was interesting in there, they specifically called out some network segmentation requirements. And so I think right, best practice from a security perspective, obviously, is to segment right your network so that the data that's flowing across your network doesn't necessarily cross traffic, right? We don't want PCI data to touch PHI data, and we don't want PHI data right to touch right other types of data on our network. I think most hospitals, especially mid to large size hospitals, are either in the middle of or have completed segmentation projects. And so that best practice obviously is in there as well. I think smaller hospitals, though, may struggle, right, with segmentation projects because those can be very time consuming and very costly.
Yes, because if you don't really understand how your data is flowing, you're probably going to have a disruptive segmentation rollout. And of course, since you're in healthcare, when that happens, you got to back out of everything, right? And try again. When I did network closet upgrades, I mean, 3 to 6 months of planning would go into each one to not be disruptive. But I want to talk a little bit about the why. Why should we be doing this? And that's because the world we live in has changed, right? We now live in a world where we have dedicated adversaries and state-level threat actors that are financed by the state or allowed to operate openly, right? These are no longer kids or people in the basement. And their primary 9-to-5 job is to make money and disrupt our institutions off of us. So cyber events have been shown to cost $10 million on average per breach. And, you know, it's also been, there's also been negative patient outcomes during these events. So this is the why. We're not doing it just for the sake of doing it. We're doing it because it's going to lead to better security outcomes or make us a harder target.
No, and I completely agree. I think, right, people don't quite understand that health information, right, PHI is actually the number one piece of information that threat actors want to go after, right? Everybody thinks it's financial information. Everybody wants your bank card data, right, so that they can go steal your money. It's super easy, right, for us to cancel our credit cards and get a new credit card number. Unfortunately, it's nearly impossible for us to change our health information, right? We can't change it. And so that information is actually much more useful, right, for threat actors. And so it's actually the number one piece of information threat actors want to go after. And so, right, the business behind cybersecurity and the business behind trying to stop threat actors, it has to be a priority for the government. And so I understand why they made all of these recommendations around strengthening HIPAA. Unfortunately, I think we're caught up a little bit in the transition of the Biden administration, right, to the Trump administration. And I think a lot of us are waiting to see exactly what's going to happen with all of these recommendations that are coming out and what's going to kind of happen next.
If these proposed updates are finalized the way that they're written now, and there's probably a likelihood that that won't happen, but, you know, maybe it will. You know, maybe some of these changes will become part of a final rule. Maybe the whole rule will be dropped. We don't really know. But if this proposed rule is finalized the way it is, what financial and clinical and operational challenges will covered entities and business associates face in meeting the new security mandates, and how can organizations navigate through these obstacles effectively? I know, Samantha, you had mentioned just that one example there about, you know, if an employee is terminated, you know, the vast number of entities and business associates you'd have to contact. But then on the other end, these business associates will be getting like a flood of notices probably from their client base. What are some of the issues you see?
So the standard implementation for a document like this falls under 45 CFR 106.105. For those of you not familiar with all the rules and regulations of the government, anytime changes occur, there is a standard 180-day implementation, right? So let's just make an assumption, which I'm sure a lot of us believe this isn't going to happen. But let's say all of this is agreed to lock, stock, and barrel, right? Organizations, healthcare organizations, any covered entity would have 180 days to actually implement all 400 pages of this document. Obviously, that would be a huge lift, right? There are massive number of things to implement in 180 days, right? We talked about, right, Stephen talked about an inventory. We talked about segmentation, right? We talked about compliance audits. We talked about, right, all these notifications. All of this would have to actually be understood, would have to be implemented, and would have to be ready to go in 180 days. The onus on organizations to do that would be astronomical, in my opinion. The effort and energy to undertake and do that is astonishing. And I'll go back to network segmentation, right? In any organization that's undertaken network segmentation, I have never, right, in my years and years of doing this, have seen network segmentation be implemented and completed in 180 days. we might be able to attest to the fact that we've started a process, right? And are working towards that in 180 days. But I can't ever see that implementation could be complete in that time frame.
I'm going to have to agree from a technology standpoint. It's not just possible. When I did network closet upgrades, again, it was 3 to 6 months of planning per closet. And for the 180 days, that means you've already done your reconnaissance. You already have the equipment scoped out. You already have it purchased on site and it's in the closet ready to go. So I just don't see that happening. The other thing we need to think about as we plan moving forward, because from my standpoint, if you're going to roll this out, it's going to be as you move forward and upgrade over time. It's definitely not going to be an overnight thing. It's just not possible.
So even if these proposed changes go nowhere, any suggestions for how healthcare sector entities can realistically strengthen their cybersecurity strategies to enhance patient data protection without busting the bank or you know, stretching their staff and their resources so thin?
I will say, right, a lot of organizations who submitted comments to the proposed HIPAA rule, right, if you go through the Federal Register, you will see a lot of the comments to this rule are overwhelmingly negative, right? I will say, though, a lot of the recommendations in here are not bad recommendations, right? The inventory, right? The network segmentation, right? Implementing multi-factor authentication. All of these are not bad recommendations. I think the way that they were written and the timeline for the implementation is really what health organizations are objecting to. I think, to your point, all organizations should be moving in this direction, right? Number one, we need an inventory. If your organization does not have an inventory, right, this is the perfect place to start. This is exactly where you need to go. If you don't understand where your data is flowing, if you don't understand what kind of data you have, if you don't understand the basic architecture of your network, that definitely is a place that you need to begin. After that, right, multi-factor authentication is an awesome place to go, followed by network segmentation. And I'm sure Steven's got five other things to recommend on top of this.
Well, we kind of have a challenge in this industry in particular, you know, because the tech stack was never designed to run securely, right? It was designed to have a bias for resiliency and uptime. It was designed to survive a nuclear war. And that foundation, you know, if you jab the network, if you jab protocols or IoT a certain way, they will respond a certain way and they may not necessarily report it because that's just how, you know, the data protocol was written. And they've been well baked for 30, 40 years now. But, you know, that's something we need to start planning for moving forward. It's no longer good enough to just buy something, turn it on, put a password on it and go, right? We're going to have to start. And this is going to be a challenge for the industry as a whole, is to start planning security into these, right? It can't be an afterthought. When you're going to buy a new product, think about the security aspects of it right then and there. If we're going to buy a new fleet of MIoT devices, make sure we understand where they communicate, how they communicate when they phone home. And that's going to bring you closer to the goal than trying to do it after the fact when you've got various fleets of equipment distributed across various logical and physical locations. That's going to be very difficult or challenging to figure out.
So at this point, what other federal cyber or related regulations are you kind of keeping your eyes on right now and why? Samantha?
Yeah, believe it or not, there's actually not a lot going on, right? All of us are obviously focused on, right, the big, beautiful bill that's out there and what implications are happening from a funding perspective from Medicare and Medicaid. I think that's taking a lot of energy and we're all kind of anxiously awaiting to see where that lands. Hospitals are really focused on funding at this point, what funding is going to look like for the next couple of years. And so that's probably the one big piece of legislation that we're all kind of keeping an eye on right now.
I think this dramatically highlights the problem of healthcare, right? Let's talk about security. No, I got to focus on the big, beautiful bill because that's far more dangerous right now. And I'll do security later, right? I think that really highlights kind of the challenge of the industry. It's a fight for survival. It's a fight for operations. And now you're going to bother me with security. I know it's a problem, but you know, the bad guys, I can write you a permission note, but they're not going to honor it. So we need to figure that out.
No, and I completely agree. I think, you know, we need to be in this together. We need to be focused on security. We need to be ensuring that we are resilient, but I hate to say from an operations perspective, right? We are fighting for our lives and fighting for our funding, and It takes away our focus sometimes, and that's disappointing.
From an operational standpoint, something I, you know, I having done some of this work before, make it bite-sized, and I would probably not focus on a geographical area. I would probably focus on a particular set of devices or data within your organization that you want to start with. Figure out where it goes, figure out where phones home, figure out what devices they live on, figure out who can touch it, and then start implementing rules just around that one particular set of data or devices until you've achieved good security outcomes, and then start expanding outwards to other devices and data. And I wouldn't necessarily start with like this location because you're gonna have too many different things flowing in and out of it.
Well, thank you so much, Samantha and Stephen. I've been speaking to Samantha Jocks and Stephen Goodreau. I'm Mary Ann Kolbasek-McGee of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.